All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Welcome to something new here on www.traxfm.org. Judge Jim's Big Debate will be back in the future for sure, but we're no short of talent here. We've got a magnificent, but I've known John for some time anyway, but his knowledge on stuff. And then you may say, oh, it's typical, couple of snowflake left-wing snowflakes talking rubbish, Rule Britannia and all that. It's not. It's just a different point of view, and you may learn something, or you may not. But I'm going to hand over to the capable hands of our very own All the Rages, John Bowd. John, take it away.
Thank you very much, David. Okay, tonight's subject I want to discuss is the state of debate. And it's something I've been writing a few articles about and will be writing some in the future. But particularly this subject is quite large and very intersectional. But that will be our first point on the left-wing snowflake debate. I've mentioned intersectionality. But I will try and keep it focused on some specifics of debate and opinion and how I think that this has become poisoned in modern life. We hear a lot in the public sphere these days about debate, how it should be conducted and by who. There are some ideas of certain norms that must be respected within debate, while also being told that everyone, no matter how extreme, should be allowed a place at the table. We're told that safe spaces abound and no one is allowed to say the horrible things that they spend most of their day saying anyway, or they end up reading in their repulsive slag newspapers. One norm we are pushed to respect is not engaging in personal attacks. However, I would argue this becomes even more difficult when the speaker has an argument devoid of facts and based entirely on their perception of how socially important they are. Many of these people do not want to debate. In fact, they want to shout and dominate and bully. Some people simply don't debate, they just talk. Grievance politics is the dish of the day, and truth literally does not matter. The right are utterly desperate and filled with fear and rage at the moment because they never saw the last couple of years coming. And in fact, contrary to many of the things they accuse those of us on the left of, pretty much everything they do online especially is personal attacks. If you check out the timelines of just two people I know of, the writer Owen Jones and the writer Laurie Penny, their timelines are often filled with Conservative representatives, some of them representatives of the Conservative Party here in Britain, some of them not that at all, just people of those viewpoints, who often attack them. They attack them over their social position and their education, because for some reason this means they can't hold left-wing views. And there's plenty of thugs quite often cheering them on, who sometimes add sexual and violent threats. In fact, what we have today is a pathetic gaggle of media whores and desperate attention seekers, hyped up on their conviction that, as for many of them, white hetero males, which is the most common group, although by no means exclusively them, that they are in fact victims. Their ideals are persecuted, and they are in fact experiencing intolerance from modern society, the mainstream media, etc., etc. I don't want to spend too much time this evening on telling you things that I'm sure most of the listeners already know. So we'll carry on. Now, whether true or not, they genuinely believe themselves to be involved in a culture war in many cases, which for the rest of us I think is quite a positive aspect because they've already lost it. Many of the people already know they've lost it, although they're never likely to admit it, but it does explain a lot of their anger. Very good example here, and I don't explain too much here, but I will explain a couple of things because I know that we do broadcast to an international audience. So the Daily Mail, which of course everyone will know in Britain, but it is a daily newspaper in this country, run by a very well-off gentleman by the name of Mr. Paul Dacre, and they have a very, very dodgy history. Daily Mail actually repeats much of this history, echoing their noble work of the 1930s, in which they helped to bring mainstream support for fascism. Everyone in the Labour Party or the working class, or any movement of the working class or anywhere on the left to them, becomes at some point or another a traitor to Britain, which is odd, as it's a country they clearly hate, if you actually read any of their stories, but they've awarded themselves a position of defending as some culturally mythical Eden that's been threatened by modern Moors. Now, again, I want to skip over this a little now because I could say a lot about self-appointed victimhood, but that's for another show. And that's a subject that's very intersectional, but we'll come back to that. Many conservative observers are obsessed with winning back some privileged position that they believe wholeheartedly they deserve and hate any part of modern society that does not give it to them. Where this leads them in terms of allegiance often is of most concern to me. Because mixed in with all of this is the far right, in one variation or another. Those who literally hate the modern world and want to turn the clock back from traditional values, whatever that means, to Brexit, to getting the bitches back in the kitchen and the gays back in the closet. Hence, they hate much of modern discourse, particularly social media, where they are often shot down, or as I believe the young people like to call it, owned. I can't quite say that word with a serious face because I'm nearly 40, but yes, they often get owned by anyone from well-informed journalists to the well-informed local supermarket shelf stacker, as is the nature of the internet, which is why it must remain free. Again, that's another week. They know that no one respects them automatically, and it really pisses them off. So we see what I think shows an attempt to rejig how the system works. Very easy when you own large media outlets. They cannot win the argument on content, so they aim to win the argument on presentation. So, when you do not have facts or truth on your side, you will need a different approach and a way to change the perception of what you are doing. Antagonism becomes robust debate. Outright lies in politically biased newspapers are a sign of a healthy democracy. Privately educated millionaires become a voice of the people. Intentionally mishearing your alternative point of view that was put to you by a person in the audience and carrying on making your incorrect point shows you are committed rather than ignorant. And if any of you want a good example of that, stand up Mr. Ben Shapiro. I'll say no more about him because I don't want to give him any more headline space. He doesn't deserve it. Again, frankly, in my opinion, and I think it's a good point in this show to underline that I am, of course, only telling you what my opinion is here, but this is, in fact, high-profile bullshit. We live in an age of the personal brand, and that defines everything. We're supposed to take all of this incoherent drivel as something seriously worthy of consideration within both national and international debate. And you know what? Some of that might even include mine. I will concede to that, but that's obviously where we are now. Okay, the writer Laurie Penny points out, and this is a really good point she made actually in an interview she gave to Scroobius Pip on his Distraction Pieces podcast a while back. She points out that when she appears on a panel show, which she often does, be it Question Time or even in interviews in Channel 4 news, places like that, she is immediately at a disadvantage simply because she cares about what she's talking about. Many of the right-wing talking heads, or those that represent the right-wing, whether they profess that or not, not only have their inflated confidence, but they're also able to display this so well because they couldn't give a damn about the subject they're talking about, nor who might get hurt in the process of whipping up future YouTube clicks. Nothing is off-limits to these people. Islamophobia, hatred, immigrant bashing, shaming the poor, refusing recognition of trans people. So in other words, constantly picking on society's most vulnerable and least likely to have a platform to fight back. Platforms are very important in what we're talking about here. We're constantly told to extend some to these people who are at best a waste of time. And meanwhile, they use that platform to constantly attack society's most vulnerable, which is bullying people. It's as simple as that. I give it as many sweet names as you want to. These people are there to work on a personal brand and nothing more. And I believe that they are a blight on public life, particularly in Britain. It displays just how worthless parts of modern culture have become, which again is something we can discuss. I'd love to talk about modern culture in another show. It's something that has some truly terrifying aspects to it, as far as I'm concerned right now, with some of the stuff that's popping up. But equally, you know, I also think that in many ways we live in a much better world now, and I'd like to stand up for it. But like I say, we'll come back to that another day. I told you this was going to be intersectional, didn't I? Okay. Now, I just want to make a point here that I'm not saying some people in the public eye are not genuinely committed to these awful viewpoints about other people. Far from it. They're not all just people who are pretending. One of the main reasons that I am an anti-fascist is because not just of my own commitments, but to the commitments of extremists, which include on the verbal front, Katie Hopkins and little Tommy Stephen Robinson Lennon, whatever that twat's name is this week, I don't care, and Paul Golding, plus the money men behind them like Jim Dowson, who is a man that we should all know a hell of a lot more about, because he's got a lot of money and some very, very dangerous and nasty views of the world, and he doesn't mind whipping up a hell of a lot of hatred.
John, can I just cut in there? The last name you mentioned.
Yes.
Could you mention that again? Who's the money man again?
Jim Dowson. He's had, unfortunately, I can't remember the date. There was one profile of him on Channel 4 News. He's a very interesting bloke, in that he has funneled a lot of money into the BNP up until their dying days. I believe, I could be wrong, I can't remember entirely, he started with the National Front, but he's run money into the BNP, he's run support into the English Defence League. A lot of those protests in Northern Ireland, you remember about the Loyalist flag protest?
That's right, yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, he was behind a lot of the funding for groups doing that, doing those demonstrations and marching, and now I don't know anyone else he worked with other than Britain First specifically right now.
Why I ask, and I'm quite well read on different, I do, unfortunately, because of the stuff that we do on Trax FM and the business I'm in. This is to the listeners, John. I tend to check out all different points of view, whether they be fascist, racist. You'd have to have a reasonably good blood pressure level to read this stuff. But I've never heard that bloke's name before in any mainstream, in inverted commas, John, media. I mean, surely that is big news, that there's major money into these. I don't care what groups they are, but I will tell you, I'll put a label on it, and you listeners, jump in if you want. These are hate groups. Make no mistake about it. And they're being and how rich is he? Is he a millionaire or?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I haven't checked his income in a while. That's probably something I could do. I mean, firstly, for people who want to check more of this out, Hope Not Hate have done a tremendous amount of paperwork that includes him. YouTube, as I say, I don't know if you the profile I watched of him, I suspect if you type in Jim Dowson, which is Dowson. And Channel 4 News, you'll probably get it. I haven't actually looked myself in recent times. Like you say, I have to be in the right mood to wade through a ton of fascist bullshit, because it does tend to do some bad things to the blood pressure. But listen, people can think what they want of these groups. There's one thing that's for certain: violence follows them wherever they go. That is undeniable.
Absolutely.
And what they do is designed to threaten. I mean, you don't, as in the case of Britain First, you don't run into mosques or stand outside them unless you're trying to intimidate people in your strange pseudo-military fatigues. It actually just make you look like you work for Homebase. But it's one of the things I find most amusing about.
What we'll do, John, because I've got a couple of points to make to you in regards to social media and these people who make things up as they go along. And I'll be mentioning a name that you probably wouldn't like, but he made some good points in his book. But we're going to go to a music break, people. I hope you're enjoying this, because I certainly am. John Baird's All The Rage here on www.traxfm.org.
John Baird's All The Rage on Trax FM. Trax FM.
You can't beat a bit of Bananarama. You cannot beat a bit of Bananarama. You're listening to John Bowd's All the Rage, and he's just educated me with a name, but I'm going to get back to that. John, just a quick one, because look, yeah, it's probably not a name you probably want to hear about, but I'm reading Gordon Brown's book, because you get a different perspective of everything, and he mentions about social media, which he was never very good at. He said people thought he was uncommunicative, but he wasn't. He was the opposite, according to his book anyway. But he said social media debates, and certainly on Twitter and Facebook, in his experience, what he saw in the Scottish referendum and the Brexit referendum was divisive. And he said it was like a boxing match without a referee.
I think that's a very good way of putting it.
Yeah, and I haven't finished the reading the book, but again, listeners, John mentioned a name there. I just didn't know it existed, and as I said, I do check up on this stuff. It's just my luck. That's what I do about these far right hate groups. And John, I didn't know this bloke existed. But take it away. Well, carry on.
Okay, let me give you just a quick bit of info. So, I like yourself, I do quite a bit of research, but a lot of people, I understand, especially listeners to this, you know, we've got, you know, people have got busy lives, so there's no point in me going, oh, you know, you want to read this 300-page report on the modern... Okay, so what, I'm going to find you some easy ones, which is, so I'm going to make a few references now. They may not be the most technically... You know, but, you know, like somebody of a more academic nature might go, oh, you know, YouTube. But listen, it's a good resource. So if you go to YouTube, if you type in Jim Dowson, firstly, you get up the fact that he was part of the Knights Templar. You also get what I believe is the report I was talking about. It's a 9-minute video called of Channel 4 News called Britain First, Inside the Extremist Group Targeting Mosques. And this was where I first learned about Jim Dowson, and he was effectively, I have to be a little careful by using the word grooming, because I know, especially in the modern world, it's a bit, it's got a hell of a lot of loaded context to it, but he was essentially grooming Paul Golding, who was is the leader of Britain First. I believe he's ex-BNP, if I'm not mistaken. Another one of those wonderful far-right groups that constantly think that anytime one of them gets recognition in some way from the mainstream media that they crave so much, they've effectively sold out, because you know, they've gone on Question Time and not called for the killing of all Muslims. It's like, oh man, you sold out, man. You've totally gone down that road. Anyway, sorry. So then he founded Britain First. Now there's also a video here, which obviously I don't have time to check myself right now, because it's 26 minutes and I've not been feeling very well today, and I don't really want to vomit. So 26 minutes of Jim Dowson. But it actually says in it, Jim Dowson leaves Britain First. And I don't know what that's about. It's him standing in front of a Union Jack, and I'll watch it some other time. There's also a little video of Nick Griffin talking about him, which I believe, if I remember rightly, they had a bit of a falling out. who'd have thought it? Yeah, that's mostly that kind of stuff. So it's that sort of thing. There's also another one of these interesting videos, of which I will mention later on, of some fella who's made a video sitting in his car outside a mosque shouting about how it's all gone too far. Now, I want to refer to the effects that people like that have on the kind of stuff we're looking at in the rest of my article. But yeah, that's a very quick introduction to Jim Dowson, and where you can find out a little bit of information about him, should you so desire. Okay, so going back to what I was saying, specifically I mentioned him just before we had the break, and I mentioned him in line with Paul Golding, Katie Hopkins, Little Tommy, and I was going to say that the people I've mentioned, plus many nameless followers, I do believe are a real and genuine threat to, frankly, to democracy and to people's safety, because the far right don't really have a great deal of respect for democracy if you actually look into their real ideology. And I do think they need to be combated. However, the attention seekers that I was referring to earlier are merely just useful dupes who fall onto this platform and perform the role for their own means. They're just as deplorable, and they do need to be challenged. But what passes for content in their arguments is effectively irrelevant, and often this is because of their character. Because in fact, much of the far right and the alt-right, which I know are more of an America phenomenon here, but so many of those things tend to sail their way over the sea, so they're always worth mentioning. I think I see them, at least from what I've researched, as really a gaggle of committed fascists, chancing white boys, and egos who are effectively want somebody to love them, along with someone who just thinks that it's a jolly old wind-up to attack socially accepted mores and norms. What's interesting is I suspect if anyone responds to this, they might talk about, you know, the right to be offensive or whatever. Now, that's fine to me, but there's a couple of caveats I put in there. One is when your actions, your words, your behaviour end up threatening people or putting people in a position of threats to their safety, to their livelihoods. Now, I also understand that we probably have some younger listeners who don't know what it's like, and I mean this, and I'm happy to say this out loud, don't know what it's like to have to run home from school for fear of getting the shit kicked out of them because of what colour they are, or because of their religion, or because of anything else. Now, on the whole, I'm glad we live in a world that's like that, and I don't want to go back to the world where that kind of stuff used to happen. So when you are, you know, effectively turning groups of people into hate figures, effectively devoid of humanity, all based on the fact that some people have performed some actions which they claim are in the name of that religion or that group, whatever, it's a very, very dangerous thing that you never actually have to suffer the consequences of, because of course you're just saying those words. Now, on the other caveat I have about being offensive is I really couldn't care if someone wants to be offensive. I'm probably quite offensive myself on occasion, but I always try and make sure I have a point to what I'm doing and what I'm saying.
Yeah, but John, I totally get. I'm just looking at some of the people you mentioned.
Yeah.
Now, some of the articles that these people do. So let's just say Katie Hopkins. Excuse me. She gets mass appeal, mainstream appeal, media. So that Loose Women thing she was on, and
she's been on BBC Woman's Hour as well.
Yeah. Now, there's a question that I think is it a tactic that they prey on people's fear? People's fear about Islam, burqas, chav names, silly little things. I can't listen to the woman because I think she's just put on earth to annoy me. But do they prey on people's fears, John? That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely, absolutely. I believe they prey solely on people's fears of the different, of the other. And you know, again, there's so much more we could say about this. But I think you see the interesting thing about this person being annoying is that they have a that is effectively what they're there for, and to them that's an achievement. To so many of their followers, to so many of the frankly, a lot of people who are on their, you know, whose Twitter pages say pro Brexit and things like that, and certainly a lot of people in the States who voted for Trump, pissing off the liberals as they see it is the be all and end all. It's all they're there for. That's all they need to do, and that's why right now you've literally, I think, in the world's most powerful country, got a president whose fan base don't really care that he's not really going to achieve pretty much any of the things that he said he was going to, but they just know that every day he's there, some form of middle class liberals, who are not the same as left wingers, by the way, especially in America, are just annoyed all of the time. And that's good enough for them. They don't care. So I mentioned earlier, it's grievance politics. And like being offensive for the sake of it, it's got no backing, it's got no depth, it doesn't go anywhere, and ultimately it doesn't mean anything.
Okay,
it's not going to make you better.
Okay, John. Well, we're going to go into a music break, because I'm going to come back at John with something else when we come back, about a little bit about Bernie Sanders, but we're going to still, because I think John's hit some interesting points. And I mentioned some of those journalists that, and I believe, having watched them, and I'm a member of the ethnic minority as well, so you must understand, I can see what angle they're going down, where they make, they create hysteria. And it's, that's their audience. Not their audience, but that's how they stoke up the audience, is create hysteria. But, yep, you're listening to the brand new, first time ever aired, John Bowd's All The Rage.
John Bowd's All The Rage. All The Rage. On Tracks FM.
When you're so in love, sometimes you gotta take a chance to break through. And when the world is not enough, that's what gives you everything or breaks you. Feeling empty, feel used. It's like we're running on fumes. A little broken, confused. But one thing I know for sure, ain't giving up on you. Ain't giving up on you. Ain't giving up on you.
Son of Craig David and Sigala, and Ain't Giving Up. You're listening to John Bowd's All The Rage, and I'll tell you, this is raw. We've not planned this, so sometimes I'll cut in on John to ask him something, because some of the stuff is quite profound to me. It's real. John, I'm going to put forward something, and I saw this, and it was very interesting from Bernie Saunders, who did a massive campaign, brilliant campaign before President Little Hands took over. And Bernie Sanders asked a question. He said, I need to get the Millennialites on my side. And that was their campaign. And when you look into Millennialites, and what he was saying was that the youth of today, or Millennialites, children born in the 2000-2001, don't have the hate that I probably would at 52. I'm 52, so I've got too much history. And his view was, and Michael Moore, the great, he's probably the American opposite of Ken Loach, agreed, said that young people don't have the hate. They don't have the hate of Notting Hill Carnival riots, which I grew up with, SUS, which I grew up with. I would get searched in every day when I was growing up. Being called all sorts of names, skinheads. I used to fight with skinheads when I was growing up regularly. They're all rusters now, which is great. So I think that's a really good point. I'd certainly agree with Ben. I don't think most of the youth have the hate of half these Britain First and all these awful people. I don't think the youth of today have that, unless they're they're groomed. We deferred from that word groomed, but I think there's grooming in all sorts. Grooming happens in all sorts. Take it away, Jim.
When I said that, I just wanted to kind of recognise the tremendous amount of political baggage that goes with the word grooming these days. No, I agree with you entirely. I think that's a very good point. What I would put on top of that is, while I think it's great that the youth don't have the hatred of us oldies, they do, however, need to have an understanding of political history. And again, this is something I will speak about on future shows, which is the importance of particularly working class history and our position in society, which has effectively been kind of rubbed out in so many ways. And also, what I would say on top of that is, while the older generations might have more hatred for one thing or another, which in itself, of course, is very poisonous when it controls you and you don't control it. I think a lot of them have very, very short memories, which bothers me a great deal. They don't really remember, conveniently remember politics. A lot of politics is very conveniently misremembered. And we all do it to some degree. You know, you can often find yourself thinking, I quite agree with this person over here. And then, you know, find out that they've been retired from politics for a long time. Actually, when they were in politics, they voted for, pushed amendments to, actually stood in favour of, or even wrote legislation that made your life worse as a working person, certainly for, you know, for us as trade unionists. There's so many people, there's plenty of people in the Blair era who had a few good points that I agreed with, but they also voted for the Iraq War, you know, which I won't forgive or forget. I think that is right, is that the youth don't have the same hatred, and that in many ways is good, but they do need to understand their political history. We all do. That's a multi-generational thing. We need to understand our real political history. And it needs to not just be, you know, people like me, you know, yelling into a microphone about how you should remember everything we've done and where we come from. Also, you know, that history is very interesting. It's a good point, I thought, to be honest. Should I go back to my main point here?
I confused you a bit.
I love you coming in. I don't mind. We can go in with that any way you like. I think it's amusing to me because I go off on these great tangents all the time, which drive a lot of people around me insane. But at the top of my page here, I've written the word "keep focus."
You're right. I think we, in order to look forward, we have to look back. That's a separate subject. Don't get me started on the education system in Britain. Will not teach kids about the British Empire and what they did, but I'll leave it there, John. Don't get me mad.
that does come into much of what we do here, and also, just in closing on that point, you know, to be continued, but knowing about the past and living in the past are two separate things. The former I like very much, the latter I despise. That's something else. Okay, so back to the point that I was reading about tonight, which is the state of debate in the modern world, and how I feel that it's suffering under a sea of extremism and fakery. One trick the far right have pulled is combining their fake concern for the state of the country or safety of young girls while pushing their white supremacist and colonialist ideology in a world where everything is seeped in irony, especially online. Irony is wonderful and very funny, but it can also be quite dangerous in this. And I think that a good example of this is some of the research that Angela Nagel did for her book Kill All Normies, where she found that many people she would find, for instance, would have swastikas in their avatars or things like that. And when she questioned them on this, they just laugh and say, "You don't get it." And it just isn't serious. And obviously, you know, adding every so often a little bit of, "Oh, have I upset you, snowflake?" So things like that, you know, thrown into the mix. There was a very good interview she gave on the podcast Zero Squared, where she talked about platforms being given to both types of these right-wingers in America. So on one side, you get someone like Gavin McGuinness, who Nagel sees as basically a comedian. Well, he's interviewing someone like Richard Spencer, and not really fully understanding that when Spencer, who is a well-known white supremacist, some listeners might be familiar with him as a guy that gave a big speech about pioneering white people. And at the end of that speech, they all yelled "Hail Trump," and people were standing and giving Sieg Heil salutes and things like that. Of course, later on, he dismissed it all as a joke, which is another one of the painful excuses of modern society, which is that you can just kind of play everything off as if it was a bit of a giggle. However, when he advocates his white supremacy, which he genuinely believes in, and the need for black people or Muslims to leave America and the West, he is absolutely serious. And I'm not sure it seems that the modern discourse we're in at the moment actually has a good way of dealing with someone like that, other than to just essentially ignore the really blatantly obvious stuff, which is, again, as I say, a threat to many people's lives, but not the threat to the lives of the majority, which is part of the problem. And this is really just a throwback to the bad old days, which I already mentioned with the National Front earlier on, when much of what they thought and said was quite mainstream, and that's worth remembering. In the words of the podcast presenter who presented this show, Zero Squared, the likes of Milo Yiannopoulos, Yamadamadopoulos, whatever his name is, and Gavin McInnes are playing a very dangerous game. Although, as ever, one where people like them are not really vulnerable or under threat. Now, I just want to say a little bit more about Angela Nagel. She's a very good journalist. Despite her very sensible view that all these people need to be faced off in the debating arena, Nagel also acknowledges that with the irony inclusion, it's very hard to know what anyone actually means. The idea, contingent with the freedom of the online world, that anyone can participate, what often happens is that even other conservatives and right-wingers who have jumped on the bandwagon of agreeing with something that McInnes has said, or even in some very unsmart occasions again with what Spencer says, some of them have even actually been very openly attacked for being Jewish or things like that by other followers online. And this would make a certain degree of logical sense, unfortunately, in a world where eugenics has been seriously debated recently, including an event in London. Again, if listeners want to refer that, this was something that came up during a recent mini controversy in British press about Toby Young, who was a right-wing troll and massive fail son, who was appointed to a position of universities minister, based pretty much, it seems, and I don't think I'm being too incorrect in saying this, by being friends with Joe Johnson, who was the universities minister at that time. Anyway, I'm sorry, I can't actually remember the exact position he was given at the moment. I've forgotten it in the mists of time and lack of sleep, but there we are. Now, the main point of what I'm blabbering on about here is that these lies and distortions often have the result of inspiring violence, of which the people who say these things never take responsibility for. And again, with all due respect to Angela Nagel, this is where I disagree a little with her argument of the need to debate these people and to defeat them, because while she makes reference to this in the Zero Squared podcast, which, by the way, listeners, is episode 90, if you want to go and look that up, Zero Squared is a podcast that goes in line with Zero Books, which is a very good publishing company that I have. I haven't read everything Zero Books have put out, but everything of theirs I've read, I've really liked. So they put out a lot of stuff by Mark Fisher. They put out some really, really good music books. But anyway, sorry, I'm going off the subject. Now, again, back to debate. Nagel refers to some of the great feminist takedowns of the 70s, such as when Germaine Greer and Susan Sontag and a few other people went up against Norman Mailer, some of these town hall meetings, of which there are clips on YouTube. I don't seem to have the full debate up there at the moment, unless I've missed it. The main issue I have with drawing reference with that is that there was no irony involved in what they were doing. Mailer may have been disagreeable, but he was also a very intelligent and sensible man. People like Milo, who tours around US campuses speaking to a gaggle of unfuckable freaks, who I think is pretty much, he clearly has no respect for, but that's, again, that's another issue. You should see the way he treats people. He's just playing a game. Now, Milo, for some of you people who don't know him, he was a guy that got kicked off of Twitter because he started a campaign against one of the actresses who happens to be black from the Ghostbusters remake, of just basically attacking her and bullying her and intimidating her until she left Twitter. Now, if attacking and bullying people until they leave social media is a sign of the wonders and versatility of modern free speech, I've got some serious concerns. And in fact, here's something I certainly do agree with Angela Nagel on, which is the content of arguments matter, which is something else she says in that podcast. It's well worth listening to. Now, I know there are plenty of loudmouthed bitches on social media who often have pictures of their own children as their avatar, who threaten violence against the left, women, or anyone else that they dislike. And how seriously we take these is an individual choice. But their inspirations are often people like little Tommy, who's never actually had to face the consequences of his hateful and lying words. And I'm quite happy to accuse him of that on air. Some of this hate speech and inspiration has included inspiring the violence of Darren Osborne, who some of you might remember as a Finsbury Park mosque attacker, along with his friend Dave the Illusionist, who disappeared at the point of the crime, apparently, and many attacks on the Muslim community, particularly after the Rotherham and Rochdale sex abuse scandals, which again is something that I think was disgustingly badly covered in the British media.
Sorry, John, you've done it again now, haven't you? You mentioned another name. Illusionist?
I'm sorry, did you not? Okay, I'm being a bit niche, I'm sorry. In Darren Osborne's... So you know Darren Osborne, the guy that attacked the...
That's right, yeah.
Okay. In his defence, which went from somewhere of me watching a lot of that thinking, okay, does he know that his goose is effectively cooked here and he's definitely going to jail? Or is he really this stupid? Because at one point he claimed that there were two other people driving it wasn't him that was driving the van. There were two other people with him. One of them was a bloke called Dave, who he didn't know the surname of. And when they said, well, the CCTV footage around the mosque doesn't show anyone other than you in the car. If they said, you know, I was lying down in the back of the car, in the back of the van asleep. He said, well, Dave's an illusionist, so I think he disappeared. So, yeah, I haven't seen the court transcript, but that's certainly what was reported on both BBC and Channel 4.
Well, I'm just, as I said, I'm just picking up what what I picked up on and what the media presented this guy as, a loner. Someone who just decided, just on his own, I was tweeted by Britain First, and I'm just a nutcase, and I went on my own and done it, and to kill Sadiq Khan and Jeremy Corbyn, and the press expression of it is that this guy is an absolute nutter and a one-off.
Yes. Well, you see, when you're white, you have the freedom of being a loner, because we don't travel in packs, apparently. We're not inspired by any other ideology. We're not inspired by any old religious books that, for instance, might be full of infanticide and rape and destruction and annihilation, as much as any other religious book is, because most of them are. And that's not... I'm not having a go at religious people, please. I don't think I'm... If that's your bag, good for you. But I don't mean it like that. I mean that the way of what you've kind of referred to is a way that these kind of things are reported. I see this as a politically active person of the left, who makes no attempt to hide what I believe. I mean, literally, I'm, you know, one of those people that's bought the T-shirt, and I've got a lot of them. And I do wonder if these people are inspired to commit actions of violence against left-wing, quote, traitors like me. Should I be afraid? Should I be afraid of their violence? You know, should I be wary of this when I walk the streets?
Well, certainly, just from my point of view now, we're going to go to a music break, but look, I'm fine. If I go out, I'll have a punch up, because that's my history. I don't want my kids to do it, though. You're listening to John Bowd's All The Rage on www.tracksfm.org.
John Bouts, All The Rage, on Tracks FM, Tracks FM, Tracks FM.
Away. You know I don't like watching anybody make the same mistakes I made. She's a real nice girl.
wouldn't tell you what you should do. Oh, listen, boy, I'm sure that you think you got it all under control. You don't want somebody telling you the way to stay in someone's soul. You're a big boy now and you'll never let her go. But that's just the kind of thing she ought to know. To accept that you're for real. Tell her about it. Tell her all your crazy dreams. Let her know you need her. Let her know how much she means. Listen, boy, it's not automatically a certain guarantee. To ensure yourself, you got to provide communication constantly. When you love someone, you're always insecure. And that's only one good way to reassure. Tell her about it, let her know how much you care. When she can't be with you, tell her you wish you were there. Tell her about it every day before you leave. Pay her some attention, give her something to believe. 'Cause now and then she'll get to worrying, just because you haven't spoken for so long. And though you may not have done anything, will that be consolation when she's gone? Listen, boy, it's good information from a man who's made mistakes. Just a word or two that she gets from you could be the difference that it makes. She's a trusting soul, she's put her trust in you. But a girl like that won't tell you what you should do. Except that you're for real. Tell her about it. Tell her all your crazy dreams. Let her know you need her. Let her know how much you mean. To accept that you're for real. Tell her about it. Tell her all your crazy dreams. Let her know you need her. Let her know how much she means.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. 1983, Billy Joel's Tell Her About It. You're listening to John Bowd's All the Rage. I was about to say Big Debate, but it's quite an enlightening, different perspective of media and speakers on media. And I think what's quite apparent is John's referring to certain speakers on media, whatever side of the fence you're on, that just make things up. Take it away, John.
Will do. Okay, so just in closing, I just want to knock out a couple of other points I wanted to make before we go on. And that is, as I've been speaking about debate, the state of debate tonight, and what I think is wrong with it, and I've been talking about the kind of mostly right-wing chancers and fakers, along with the very seriously committed extremists who are making up a very disturbing gaggle of extremism. And the result of all this, I think, is rather than us having a robust democracy with opportunity for all voices to be heard and truth to flourish, what we actually have is a bunch of egotistical chancers bending all information to their will and broadcasting to a nation full, although not entirely, but full of backward, broken grievances, hyped up on tabloid bullshit. Within this is a total confusion of contradictory viewpoints that can often be held by the same person. And many of the view holders go from a grievance at modern Britain that's under the thumb of the left or feminists or Islam or whatever else, to reminiscences, real or imagined, of life when we had better employment, more time off and more job security. or in other words, the socialist post-war consensus. So one minute you're like a right winger who wants to ban this, that, the other and get rid of these people, and the next minute you're mistily looking back to that very, you know, spirit of 45. The idea of there being some kind of equality of opinion within debate, simply by having an opinion you have an equal viewpoint, is to me absolutely ludicrous. Equally, the idea of acceptable norms and what is done and how it is supposed to be expressed is something that I completely reject. You cannot argue to me that debate matters when truth doesn't matter, when facts don't matter, when things can be ignored and washed over and no one is saying these things, takes any responsibility for anything, including violence, that can be inspired by their speech. From David Irving to Jordan Peterson and plenty of people in between, they're twisted, racist, bigoted, and most importantly of all, incorrect. I have tried to use this idea of debating with these people, and it is like trying to drive a machine with the most important piece missing. It just simply doesn't work. You need to deal with a culture that has degenerated to the point of being able to call itself post-truth before you can deal with how we can best engage with each other and debate with each other. The presence of the younger representatives of I mentioned above on YouTube shows that they do have very, very strong following. They're probably stronger than the left do, actually. And they're not all allergic to the modern world. That's just more of the older generation. The left needs to respond, no doubt. I agree with that. But not by taking these professional contrarians seriously. It will be better to make our culture and history more prominent and remind people where we come from, but more importantly, where we are going. Because the right wing, in all of their glowing, late capitalist, Western culture-obsessed trattery, are dead, and they know it. And that's something that I think we really, really need to underline. How best we can do that? Well, stay tuned for future episodes, and you and I will definitely discuss that, Dave. As for many of the shower that I've mentioned above, give them the respect they deserve, everyone, which is zero. They don't give a shit about freedom of speech or anything else. They just want to attack and bully. They want to produce fear, and they want to promote themselves. And while some will complain about my view in this, I understand that, but I can tell you they're not going to be getting any help from me, nor any respect, because I know what they are. So that's basically the main bit I wanted to say. Thank you for listening. There's a couple of things I would recommend people check out. The aforementioned Zero Squared podcast, episode 90 with Angela Nagel, and also her book, Kill All Normies. I also like to mention Paul Mason's... Kill All Normies is on Zero Books, of course. Paul Mason recently put out something via Navarra Media, which is also on YouTube, which is his dissection of fake news. It's actually called Paul Mason Explains Fake News. It's about 6 minutes, and it's very, very good. It talks about the recent Corbyn spy allegation. It talks about the conspiracy theories. I don't really talk about conspiracy theories tonight, which is also a lot of what's mixed up in much of what comes out of here. And, you know, lest we forget, conspiracy theories are those things that by their very nature you can't really debate with people, because they're based on something that is unprovable. Therefore, to some degree, it's not provable wrong, if you know what I mean. I don't know if I garbled that slightly, but I think you know what I mean.
I did see the Paul Mason... and it is about 6 minutes. Do track that down, listeners. Listen, I'd like to thank John. Very enlightening, John. It's his first show, and it will be a regular hit on www.tracksfm.org every Wednesday. Next week we'll probably be talking about something totally different, but it's real and it's happening. Coming up next, David Albee and the Badger Show.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.tracksfm.org.